better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team is on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
John doesn't know something about something? Wow, I figured he knew everything. That's not true. I do not know the feeling that many parents are having this morning with it being back to school for their children.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
That was not me playing that. That was my co-host Tommy Kraft, because Tommy Kraft, in case you didn't know, has kids going back to school today. Congratulations, Tommy. I'm happy for you. I'm proud of you. You made it. It's a great day for you and your wife, for sure.
Yeah, mainly for the wife. Don't congratulate me. Congratulate her, yeah. There will be around the state, as I think many school districts go back to school today. Some in our listing areas across the border went back last week. But, yeah, I think the mimosas and the morning margaritas will be flowing about 8:05 today. So,
yeah. And, again, I find it fascinating because there's some things, obviously, where you're at within your life and where I'm at in my life that I don't understand. So I had to kind of just rely on you for these things. Because to this morning, I'm walking in, I would have no idea or clue.
You didn't even know it was back to school day.
No, yeah. And the only way I would is when I see the bazillion pictures that get posted on social media by all their parents and saying how proud they are of their children. Here's their first day of school outfit, yada, yada, yada. And it just blows up. That would be, I guess today was back to school day. Mm-hmm. But see, I wouldn't have known it if you hadn't walked in and said, this is a celebration day for the wife. Is it going to be a celebration day for everybody across the state? This is a great day.
By 15 after 8, she'll just be home listening to silence for the first time in 90 days. Silence.
It must be a game changer there, too. But here's my question. Why is it starting on a Tuesday?
I don't know. I've always tried to. They usually start on like a Wednesday or a Thursday, and then it's just kind of, you know, there's not much going on. It's a bunch of nonsense and horseplay for the first 2 or 3 days.
Syllabus week.
And then you get into the actual work next Monday. I don't know. They're starting on a Tuesday. Can they horse around for 4 days? I don't know. But for the first time, I was looking at their school calendar. They're out the entire week of Thanksgiving this year, which is unusual. So that might be why they're starting 2 days earlier, is because they're going to get 2 more days off in November. But the more I think about this year-round school calendar, boy, I hated it as a kid. But the more I think about it, the more I could, we put this thing to a ballot. I think it would pass.
So you're saying throughout the entire year have school?
Well, you have longer breaks,
right, but
periodically, but yeah.
For the most part, kids are in school year-round.
Yeah.
Are you for that just because it'd be less time
I love my kids, but I think it would be easier on them to stay in more of a routine.
True. But you got to admit, though, when you were a kid, summer break was always a time where you have your best memories. It's where you went on vacations were able to play outside and the pools and the lakes and the rivers and all that. So, I could see it both ways, but I don't know. It's a summer break. There's something about it. But I know that summer break is coming to an end, obviously. So, it's a good day for a lot of parents.
We need a break from summer right now.
Yesterday might have been the hottest day I've ever been a part of in my life.
This is y'all's first big... You and Ty's first day over 100. I don't know that we got over 100 degrees yesterday. Or last year. I think it's been...
I don't think we did.
2 or 3 years since the actual air temperature in the River Valley where we reside. We broadcast to a lot of parts of the state. Northwest Arkansas, where you guys have spent a lot of your time in recent years, doesn't experience the kind of...
No.
...heat and humidity combination that... that we seem to get here.
It was incredible.
In 2011, now, you know how yesterday was. It was just too hot to even go outside. It was too hot to walk from the studio to your vehicle, kind of hot. I mean, it was just suffocating, wear the air kind of hot yesterday.
I know which summer you're already talking about.
2011.
Yep.
My wife was with child, our youngest daughter, who will be 8 years old this Sunday. and there were 16 straight days where the air temperature, not the heat index, the actual air temperature exceeded 110 degrees, like 16 days in a row. I'm still paying on that electric bill, by the way, because she gave me that, if you even think about touching that thermostat, you know, well, honey, our electric bill's $900. We can, you know,
worth it.
It's set on 58. I'm pregnant. Leave me alone. You know,
worth it.
Yeah.
Worth it.
Still paying on it.
Good grief. Imagine if your air conditioning went out.
Oh,
no, we'd have been time.
Hoteling it.
Yeah. Well, I remember that because I was at school at the U of A, and it was like every day that month of July was 100 degrees. Every single day. It was over 100
degrees.
Try
110, pal.
Yeah. Well, I didn't want to, and I don't want to now. And yesterday, it was so hot that when I took Rowdy out to use the bathroom, he lifted his leg and steam came out. Like, it was that type of day where it was just, it was blistering. So,
do you see where, what's the guy's name on Channel 5, one of the other, Matt Standridge? He did what, he took, like, slice and bake cookies and some other things and actually put them in a car yesterday. I mean, we know it's hot inside cars, but they actually baked. I mean, that's how...
That's impressive.
It's how hot it is. So, I mean, I think you could fry eggs on sidewalks, that kind of thing.
I should have done that so my truck would smell like cookies.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the best thing out of the whole deal. Yeah, but it was that hot yesterday. So it's funny when we talk about fall camp. And, hey, it's fall camp, but it's actually 180 degrees outside, too.
Many of these high schools in our area have returned to practice. And I know that, you know, coaches know more now about heat exhaustion, heat stroke, player safety than we've ever known before. So, I mean... It would be rare and I'd say dangerous to drive by a high school or a junior high or something to see them practicing, you know. And I remember practicing when I was playing junior high football. We'd go at 4 o'clock on a day like yesterday.
Yeah.
3:30, 4 o'clock, whatever. You sat there 3 hours. They'd never let you, nor should they let you do something like that in today's times. We just know too much.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And that's the scary thing about it, folks, just... You know, it's fun in summertime to be outside, but those are types of days where it's even too hot to do anything outside, really. I mean, it was the weirdest thing at my apartment complex. Every day this summer, there's always been people at the pool. Yesterday during prime time, never wasn't a single person there.
Well, I'm just so grateful that we get to work in the air conditioning, number one.
Just,
you know, for our, you know, there's a lot of great listeners that they work construction, they work landscaping, they work... You know, all sorts of walks of life that their job requires them to be out in this heat. They're probably listening now because they start early before dawn to get the coolest parts of the day. Not 80 something degrees on my car driving in this morning. So, I mean, it's better right now out of the sun, but man, I feel for those folks and hopefully they can get everything they need to get done early and be done with it by. A little after lunchtime.
Yeah. Drink plenty of water.
Oh.
stay hydrated and stay cool as much as you can. Well, that was the thing is I didn't go to CrossFit yesterday. Kind of glad I didn't because, you know, in the CrossFit gym, and there's no like air conditioning. It's just all open warehouse type stuff. And even
make you tougher.
Yeah. Because that's what I'm going for. I'm trying to be tougher, mentally tougher too. But it's
when's it
going to
start working?
So. I don't know. Here's probably in the next 5 years, maybe, if I keep going, but I'll probably keep finding excuses to be a wimp when it comes to that, because I can't be out there in that heat. But either way, though, folks, it is hot outside, but fall camp is going on, and of course, we're going to discuss some of the things coming out of fall camp. And yesterday, there was a few players that got to meet with some of the media members and some things that we could take away from that as well. But one of the best things I saw yesterday, and we'll discuss this later in the show, though, is the fact that, like brother, Grant Morgan is kind of the designated trash talker of the team because it was mentioned yesterday by Grant Morgan that they were trying to get after KJ Jefferson a little bit, see what he could do in a situation where he's getting kind of talked to a little bit, you know, chattered with. So who did Joe Craddock go and find? Who was the first guy he went to? He's like, hey, I need you to do this. He found Grant Morgan to go talk some trash to him. And Grant Morgan did talk some trash to him. I wish I could have heard some of the things that he was throwing at him, but apparently KJ Jefferson responded really well. But I thought that was pretty hilarious because we all remember exactly Drew Morgan and his the way he kind of had his own personality when it came to trash talking as well.
You ever lived in a house where someone had like a little Yorkie pup, one of these little small dogs?
I haven't lived in a house, but I've been to a house that has, yeah.
You know how these dogs, they'll run up to the Great Dane in the neighborhood, the Doberman Pinscher, the Rottweiler. And just start, you know, just yapping with no fear. And why is that? Because the Yorkie doesn't realize how small they are, how undersized they are in comparison, and it doesn't matter to them. And that's what I kind of get with Grant Moore. He doesn't care that he might not fit the typical profile physically of a SEC linebacker. And I think this is just true with him and his brother both. They didn't care that they were undersized, that everything. Just go out there like that Yorkie and run right up to the Great Dane and just start yapping. Mm-hmm. Just start barking.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a good quality. I mean, it's a great quality to have, especially if you're that undersized kid, because I think that it fuels you into becoming a really good player like Drew Morgan. Yeah. Drew Morgan, well, if you look at the on paper, should not have been a great wide receiver. He shouldn't have been.
Mm-hmm.
But he was, because it was his mentality and his hard work and his effort and just how he approached the game. And I think Grant Morgan's kind of the same way.
Yeah. And you know, when you kind of talk yourself in a corner, then you got to back it up.
Yeah, and that's the key in the SEC, is if you're going to do that, you got to back it up somehow.
Both these brothers have played extremely well. You think about the sets of brothers we've had, the Allen brothers, the Morgan brothers,
the
Henry lineage
has
been up there. Yeah, I mean, it's been a lot of sets of brothers. I was reading a headline. I didn't read the full article about the Henrys. And I'm not even sure who I'd credit who it was, but I don't even remember. I just was scrolling through on Twitter that there's been a lot of sets of brothers along the ways, but this is probably the first father and sons and uncles and just the Henry family that has been up there. It was kind of the quick little blurb I was reading on Twitter. I didn't click on it, but you stop and think about that.
Yeah.
You know? So, but we've had a lot of sets of brothers in recent times.
Yeah, well,
Casey Dick and Nathan Dick.
Yeah, forgot about them, yeah.
Who? Anybody else I'm missing?
Ty,
can you think of anybody?
I can't. I'm
just saying say 10, 15 years.
I know that Peyton Hillis and his brother played, or was at Arkansas. His brother didn't play much. Mm-hmm. I remember his brother was on the team.
Didn't play enough that I even knew he was on the team.
Yeah, he was on the team. And none that come to mind besides those. You know, we should do a power rankings of the best family in Razorback football history.
Hmm. Well, the Henrys would have to be one, right?
You would think, but I mean, both Allen brothers were pretty good. But I know some people, for some reason, just don't like them. I don't know why, but the numbers were really good when they were quarterback. And you would have taken them last year for sure, one of them. So, Hunter Henry for sure was the best. But we haven't seen much from Hudson and Hayden just yet to...
Right,
which you expect.
That story's not complete.
Right, yet. You expect big things. JT in Hot Springs just texted into the Cherokee Casino Hotline. Said the Gregg brothers both played. That was another one.
Thank you. Although, I knew we were forgetting some.
Yeah, although Will Gregg didn't really even see the field and ended up transferring. But James in Charleston texted in and says Marcus and Malik. Wait, oops. Yeah. Way to bring that up again, man. Way to bring that up for so many Razorback fans.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Everybody staying home. Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're at number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs!
Money is something that gets thrown around in college sports a lot these days. You know why? Because it's a very profitable business. In fact, it's so profitable that it constantly causes controversy on if the athletes that are involved in the NCAA should be paid, how much they should be paid, how should they be compensated, because it seems like all the money's going to the evil NCAA and the evil schools and the evil coaches and the evil athletic directors and on and on and on and on and on. Well, USA Today, they put out this list pretty much every single year around this time, because I remember it coming out around this time last year, where they say they give the schools that generate the most revenue that these respective universities, right, and of course dealing with college football specifically, where is most of this money comes from. But if you could name if you could think about the number one school that makes the most money of all universities in the country, which one would it be?
Now, I haven't seen this list. So you're going to automatically, you know, your mind probably goes to Alabama because they've been one of the most successful programs consistently in recent times. But generally, I've learned on this list, you better take like the programs that are on the next tier of winning that have the biggest stadiums. Even Tennessee for years, when they weren't winning at the level they once were in the late 90s and early 2000s, still generated more revenue because they had 100 plus thousand seats. Now, some other venues have caught up, but it's still about football ticket sales. So programs like Michigan, like Tennessee, now Alabama has a stadium that's right at 100,000 seats. That's what makes the difference, is being in one of two leagues, the SEC or the Big Ten, because they have the biggest conference distributions, and then having huge stadium capacities. So I bet when we go down this list, those variables are going to be there.
You would think, and I think we can go through the stadiums, but if you said number one, though, to me, at least the one I thought of, and I know I've seen the list, you haven't, but to me, I was going to say Texas.
Yeah, Texas is...
Texas is number one.
Yeah.
They have
the Longhorn Network.
Mm-hmm.
They get a bigger share of the Big 12 money, and their stadium isn't 100,000, but it's
close.
It's pretty big.
Yeah,
so it's
big. Of course, I know it doesn't mean as much in the money, but they do serve beer.
They're close to it. I mean, everybody talks about the beer deal. And it generates a few million dollars a year. This isn't a major windfall for your program in the scheme of, sure, a few million dollars is a lot of money. I'm not arguing that. But in the scheme of $140 or $150 million budget, a couple million dollars is nothing.
It's a drop in the pan. But what's funny is the number two team is also from the state of Texas.
A&M. Yeah, and A&M's in the SEC, so they get that $40-something million check. And they recently expanded their stadium to like not $340,000 or whatever.
Spent $500 million on it.
$500 million with a B.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought, and it's interesting because they also give total revenue and total expenses for each one. Now, Texas made $220 million roughly in the 2017-2018 year, because that's what this data is from.
I remember when that number for the top school was in like the 140-150 range. Mm-hmm. 130-140, actually.
$220 million.
That's not that many years ago.
Yeah. Well, their expenses of the $220 million was $206 million.
Well, they got to, because they got this nonprofit status.
Right. But for Texas A&M, they made $212 million, but they only spent $165.
Yeah, and I don't know how that works. Because at some point, the IRS comes in and says, well, you're not a nonprofit. Now, or at least that's always the threat under being a 501(c). Well, you can only retain so much revenue. So, I don't know how they skirt around all these issues and how many years you can do that. But yeah, sometimes the struggle is spending enough money and finding more places to spend it reasonably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what made it so surprising with A&M. And here's the thing, too, folks. This isn't just saying this is all the money they get. There's no telling how much more money they get from, you know, the private foundations and the boosters.
Well, generally, that's factored into all this, like the Razorback Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And the money they raise goes into your total revenues, generally.
Right, right. But I'm saying that there could be even more money that's not on the books for what I'm saying. I mean,
under the couch cushions?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, but the point is of all of this, folks, is that... And they're of the top 25, because that's usually, you know, one of the ranking evidence that you look at. Arkansas actually ranks 23rd. Now, last year, or at least the last time this data was taken, they ranked at 19th. So there's a few, obviously dropping off a little bit, but that's what happens when you're not having the big time success on the football field. Stuff like that happens.
And I think we're seeing evidence, more and more evidence around our state that, you know, the lack of winning is having a bigger effect as the days and the weeks go on revenue, directly with the program, indirectly with other ways that derive their revenues from the success of a football program. You know, and these things don't show up immediately, but it's starting to take its toll. And it starts with ticket sales. And you know, Arkansas desperately needs in the next couple of years, and I don't think anyone believes it'll be this year, to get back to 8-9 wins. And then you know what another period like the 10-11 season would do financially for this program?
They'd go up top 15, maybe.
I mean, but tickets right now are at a dangerously low level. I mean, we're not talking about, I'm not talking about trying to get 70,000 in there and sell the stadium out. I'm talking about having games we saw like last year where there were, 40,000 people in the stadium?
It was embarrassingly empty.
Right. So we're not talking about sitting here saying, we've got to sell this thing out. They need to get back to where the tickets sold are in the 60,000 range. You start just doing the math on face value. Don't even consider the donation they're losing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a whole other set of subset of revenue they're losing as well, is the seat donation when you don't sell the season tickets. It's just amazing the millions of dollars being lost by tickets, you know, that get barbecue sauce on them at the end of the day.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about selling out the stadium from 1999. You know, not the stadium now. You're talking about getting 50,000, 55,000.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where you're at. You're
just, more reasonable. That's still not an acceptable.
No, but it's certainly being better than what it was.
But what I'm saying is, getting back to just eight or so wins would at least, I believe, being semi-relevant. I'm not even talking about competing for a division. I'm talking about competing for like third or fourth in the division consistently. I believe would get the tickets sold somewhere back in the 60-something thousand range.
Easily.
And right now, they're just struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Struggle bus.
Yep, and they're doing some things that I'm appreciative of that I want to bring up later in the show.
And you're still 23rd in the country.
Yeah, but here's the thing, too. That's 10th in the SEC, 23rd in the country. It's like the recruiting rankings right there. You know, it's like, oh, wait, 23rd's not bad. Oh, 10th in the SEC.
Well, now, here's what's going to change. You got Texas and Texas A&M on that list.
That's right.
Texas
one and two.
Texas, I know, is not an independent, but damn near. A lot of these schools on this list are going to be in the Big Ten or the SEC because the conference distributions just give you an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
The question I've got, John, you know, the Pac-12 network's never really done a lot to increase their revenues and get them anywhere close to the leagues I just mentioned. It'll be interesting, though, to see what the ACC, you know, we forget about where people live in this country sometimes. We get all fired up, well, the Pac-12's got their own, you know. Still not that many people out there in total. I know California is like the second most populated state, but still more people live east of the Mississippi than live west of the Mississippi in this country. And you think about the upper Midwest, and you think about the eastern seaboard and where people live and where that conference stretches, talking about the ACC. This ACC network launches, what, in 10 days? I think it's August 23rd. It will be interesting to see over the next 2 to 3 years. You know, yeah, the Clemsons of the world are going to rise, but, you know, what about, you know, some of these other schools in that, like Maryland or Miami or just Virginia Tech, Louisville, what their revenues go to as a result and what the distributions end up being. You know, is the ACC network something you will be willing to pay for, willing to upgrade your plan, willing to make sure you're on the right tier with your satellite provider to get that channel? Because it's going to basically add $2, $3, $4 a year to whatever provider you're with, just like the SEC network did. We all gladly paid it. The ACC network is counting on the same thing.
Yeah. Well, and to go to your point of the ACC, there's only two teams from the ACC in the top 25.
That's what I'm saying. If we revisit this list in 5 years, will Arkansas be in the top 25 as more ACC schools?
Yeah.
I believe we'll invade that list with the creation of the ACC network.
Yeah. What's crazy is none of them are Clemson in the top 25. Kind of funny there. Florida State and Louisville are the ones that are in the top 25. But no, that's the thing is that in the next 2 or 3 years, there's no telling just to that alone what will change and how this list will look like.
But you say, is it money that creates the wins or wins that create
the
money?
Right. That was originally my question.
And you just revealed that Clemson's not in the top 25.
Mm-hmm. But most programs that are perennial, blue blood programs are right there in the mix. Because just to give you a quick rundown of the top 10, for instance, you got Texas A&M at 1 and 2, Ohio State, Michigan, Alabama, Georgia, Oklahoma, Florida State, Penn State, Florida. That's your top 10.
Hmm.
And then even after that, you go...
So the ones from the Big 12 are national brands, national programs with Texas and OU.
And Oklahoma, correct. And then after, you have Auburn, Michigan State, LSU, Tennessee, Nebraska... You know, coming in after that.
Yeah.
Not saying that, you know, it's a direct correlation, but it's just made me wonder with this list. Are these schools making money because of the success, or is the money that they are making creating the success?
Well, but I find it... Then how did Clemson do it?
They are the outlier to it all.
How did Clemson become one of the best two programs in college football in current times? Not all time, but right now Clemson is either 1 or 1A, right? It's Alabama and Clemson.
Right now.
Nobody's arguing, right?
Right now.
Nobody's objecting? All right, good. And they're doing it, and they're knowing they have top 25 revenue. Now, does that give you more hope as a Razorback fan that you can at least climb out of this ditch?
For sure.
23rd in the country in revenue. It's always better to have it and than not have it, right? When it comes to money, it's always better to have it at your disposal. Arkansas has it at its disposal. To me, it just makes it more frustrating. Wait a minute. You're telling me Clemson has been a power in college football? How long has this been now? 4 years? 5 years? They've been a powerhouse?
Roughly, yeah.
Wait a minute. You're telling me Clemson's been a powerhouse for 5 years and they're not even top 25 in revenue? And Arkansas has been in the toilet for 5 years and we're 23rd?
Mm-hmm. Arkansas has more revenue than Clemson. Now, this is from 2017-2018, so this is obviously the championship, but yes.
Yeah, and Clemson's position may change when you add in some more of this. I bet you they're in the top 25.
Yes.
But my point is they built what they've built without having that kind of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Does it give you hope or frustration?
I think it should give you hope because it
probably
can show
both.
It can show you that the right coach can do what they can do for you. That's what it comes down to. It's because is Clemson who they are right now because of Clemson, or are they that way because of Dabo Sweeney? They're that because of Dabo Sweeney.
So
it's all about the coach.
Steve is watching in Tampa on our Facebook live stream and makes the note that ACC Network won't thrive until basketball season. That's a great point. The SEC Network is a football-driven network. Yeah, it's there for football. And I think even in baseball, it may be more popular than in basketball season. And that's changing a little bit. But, Steve, that's a great point. The ACC Network, and when people will really want that plan, when people will really be paying, that's a basketball. I mean, we can talk about Clemson and Florida State and Louisville. And then who are really Miami? I mean, who are really the football programs? I mean, it's a basketball league.
Yeah, well, without a doubt.
And all those schools, with the exception of Miami and Clemson, are basketball schools probably just as much. Is Louisville or football or basketball school?
Basketball.
Yeah, I'd say so, in the state of Kentucky.
Yeah. Duke, North Carolina, Syracuse,
Florida,
Virginia.
Florida State's a football school.
Yeah. Virginia just won the title, so I think they're safe. Oh, no, it's for sure basketball.
I mean, that's a basketball league, so that's a great point on the ACC Network. But it's going to make money for that league and going to change the dynamics of the top 25. But that doesn't mean Arkansas's money's going to diminish or any in our Ole Miss or anybody else. But it just means the national landscape is more competitive.
Yeah.
But it also tells me, you can be successful. You can get it done without having 200. I mean, if money mattered, Texas would be better.
That's right.
And Texas still sucks. Now, I believe they're on their way back with Tom Herman, but they got 200.
For
the
most part, yeah.
They got $250 million a year at their disposal. And A&M's got 200 and plus million, and nobody winning anything down there.
Nope.
In the best, most fertile recruiting grounds for football in America.
Money doesn't always mean happiness in college football, folks.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas, 80 yards.
We were talking about this in the previous segment, this Hogtown thing that the Arkansas Razorbacks is putting together, trying to add a little event and a little party there before the game. I think it's a good idea. Tommy thinks it's a good idea. What do you think? What do you make of this whole event that they're trying to put together?
Well, I did notice your unabashed delight about the development yesterday on Twitter. So I concur. I mean, I think anything they could do to draw people to the stadium, and they've got some stuff that are set up for the kids with the face painting and the inflatables and all that kind of stuff. And they also have a beer garden. So that will have to be administered, I would say. But, hey, and you got a big screen up so you can watch the college games that are on that day. Mm-hmm. It's smart, and they understand they're competing against high-def TVs and all the things we've talked about on this show. And they just need to try to get more people at the stadium, which could lead to, you know, more walk-ups and that kind of stuff for the game. So, as they mentioned in the release, that Hunter Yurecek listened and watched, and now they're applying these things to the game day experience.
Yeah, I give them credit for trying. I mean, whether it works or not, give them credit for trying up there. To try to do new things to to get butts back in seats, because that is the challenge right now.
My experience with Hunter Yurecek so far have been that he is listening. He's a witty guy. He's been on the job now for what, a year and a half, and I like what I've seen. And my personal experiences with Hunter Yurecek have all been pretty good.
All right, we haven't spoken since the scrimmage on Saturday. We've read some of your stuff there in the Democrat Gazette. It was an interesting scrimmage. Just your takes on what happened Saturday and how important this week is leading up to the next big scrimmage this Saturday on the 17th.
Super important week. The way they're splitting the fields, they understand they've got to get more players ready for SEC action, and the way you do that is you run the reps at them. So they're doing everything they can. I mean, you've got to credit Chad Morris and his staff. They recruited a nice class. They brought speed in. They increased the numbers in their lines. They got faster guys for the secondary and the receiver core. They upgraded at quarterback. They're trying. Now it's a matter of who's going to be on the plane. And I think there's going to wind up being some guys in the travel roster or not on the travel roster who probably thought they were. And so that just leads to increased depth. There were touchdowns. The offense won the belt yesterday, which was the first time, I think, in camp, because they had low turnover count and they scored in the red zone with some efficiency. As Chase Harrell put it, they dominated in the red zone, and he caught a touchdown. We do know that. Don't know all the rest of the scores from the red zone yesterday, but Grant Morgan was saying that he thought if it was just the first and the third down efficiency that the defense might have won on the situational stuff. So just another big week, and trying to get as many reps in with this team as they can.
Tom, I want to ask you about the quarterback situation, obviously, because every time we talk to you, we got to get an update on that. But it certainly seems like that some of the praise that was shown, not towards Ben Hicks, not towards Nick Starkel, but John Stephen Jones by Chad Morris and Joe Craddock was really high. And it kind of got people wondering, an alarm, like, what's going on here? Why is he the guy? Why is he the one that's starting to look at least best in these practices, or at least getting the praise for it? I guess I took it more of trying to send a message to the other quarterbacks. How did you take that of the praise for John Stephen Jones and the job he's doing?
Oh, exactly the same way. I mean, look, John Stephen Jones is, we know he's a studious guy. He's a team guy, and apparently he led his team down very well. But we also know that he threw the pick sixes to Jalen Catalon. This is a message to the two guys. They did the same thing last year when Chad Hyatt came in and said, or when Chad Morris came in and said that Dalton Hyatt was looking really good about this stage of fall camp. So I think it's going to come down to the two grad transfers. I also think, and I don't think this is a bad thing at all, I think they're going to feel it out in the Portland State game, give both guys opportunities, and then see who they're going to roll with at Ole Miss. Now, if they have bad results at Ole Miss, they might switch back, or they might still be swapping out. You got two more non-cons, you know, before you go back into conference play. So I think the schedule sets up nicely for them to get a real good feel for which quarterback is going to be the most effective. And the truth of it is, on different days, one or the other could be. We know that Nick Starkel's got the better arm. He can hit the downfield throws, the deep outs, the go patterns, and all that kind of stuff with a tighter spiral and more on the ball. We know that. We also know that Ben Hicks has been involved in this offense more often. I think it's going to come down to ball security. You know, who's going to create the fewest turnovers and who can get his team in the end zone the most, and I think it's a pretty tight race.
Tom Murphy with us on the Cherokee Casino Hotline. With the injury to Noah Gatland, who is going to be the right tackle in your opinion, and where does Myron Cunningham fit in this offensive line?
Well, it might be him. I mean, they've got another, like Chad Morris was saying, huge week for this team. Well, this is a huge week to find out who the third tackle is. And it might be Myron Cunningham right now, and it might be Ryan Winkle, or they might have a guy they like at guard, and Shane Clinton can kick out and play tackle. That's what all this cross-training is about, to develop guys who, you know, it basically comes down to who's our number six guy. And I think that might have very well been Noah Gatland. So his injury is it's nothing to just say, oh, we can overcome that. I mean, that was not a good injury for him or the team, because I think he was the number six guy. He might not have been able to play guard, but I think he was number six. Myron Cunningham might be the next guy up. And then you're talking about Ryan Winkle and Kirby Adcock and some other guys. But at least they now have more depth, and they can do the rotating and stuff and feel like they haven't lost a ton.
Well, and really the only reason they're able to go on these multiple practice fields and multiple ends is because of offensive line numbers. They couldn't do this a year ago, even if they had thought of this practice format, because they didn't have enough linemen. The offensive line and the numbers there, Tom, is the reason they can get all of these players all across the roster more reps.
You're absolutely right there. You know, I wrote about that on Monday. Yeah, and it's getting the guys who are deeper down the chart who might be 13. It gets them more reps. Same with these receivers. And it's good all around. As I tried to reflect on it, I thought perhaps the only negatives were that if you're Joe Craddock and this quarterback makes a mistake on the other field, he might not get the exact correction or suggestion right there on the spot, and it has to be done in the film room. But the increased reps is definitely a huge advantage.
All right, Tom, you know, with the way that these scrimmages are going too, it's like 175 plays on Saturday. And one of the things is, first off, that's a long, at least in comparison, I believe, to what Brett Bielema was doing. I don't know about Petrino because that was way back when, but it seems like it's a pretty extended scrimmage. But it also keeps the matter of Chad Morris coming out saying, hey, I want it as hot as it can be. And it's been hot over the past few days here in Arkansas, but he wants it hotter. He wants it tougher. He wants basically to push this team. And I just find it fascinating because you got to find that balance of pushing them too much and whatnot. But do you feel like, is that something that he tried to do last year too? I'm trying to remember. Or is this kind of this new phase of trying to make this team tougher just mentally and also physically and making sure they're ready for the SEC season?
No, they had some long camp scrimmages last year too. But here's the way you have to think about it. It's that your starters and your twos, nobody's getting the same amount of reps that they would get in a real game, because your starters are just going to be in there so much more during a game. When you're talking about 175 plays, the threes and the fours are getting some action too. Now, my personal opinion, I would think that the ones and twos snap counts would increase in this upcoming scrimmage. It's kind of like preseason in the NFL. You know, your main dudes aren't playing a whole lot the first couple, three games. And then you give them some action late. What's the reverse here? You got to get your – or what's the same here? You got to get your starters a lot more time as you get near to the season. So, it's a question whether or not this field is going to be ready. I think they finished up with the grass, the sod laying on Friday, and it needs a good full week for the roots to get into that matrix and feel good about not losing a bunch of clumps. So, I think it's going to be a close-run thing as to whether they can actually get on the field at Razorback Stadium on Saturday.
When do you think we'll start really calculating, formulating, or can we, until the coaches release at game week, a depth chart? If the media is not getting to witness any practice, it's kind of hard to put a depth chart together other than piecing together player statements, coaches' statements. But I would say this Saturday goes a long ways, as we were talking earlier. When do you think it'd be safe to say, all right, we got starters at these positions? Is it this Saturday, or is it the following Saturday after the Beanie Bowl?
Well, I think that after Saturday, the coaches will have a pretty good idea. And there might be a couple of positions, like the backup right tackles, things like that we were talking about earlier, that might still be up in the air. But I think you're getting really close to they know now as a matter of whether they release it. And the thing is, there's some periods of practice where the ones go out there, and we can see, you know, if Deion Stewart and Devion Warren and Mike Woods are running with the number one receivers. There's times that we see that. So I've already put my depth chart together for our football tab that's coming out the last Sunday of the month, and there might be a few tweaks in it, but I feel pretty comfortable where I stand with it. And you know, we'll ask Chad about that on Wednesday. We'll ask the coordinators next time we talk to them, and we'll see where they, you know, how much information they will bid. But it's an interesting kind of a newer trend in college football. There's some programs that don't put their depth chart. I think Michigan doesn't put out a depth chart maybe at all, and I think other programs are starting to do that. I guess they don't want to, you know, enrage some of their blue ribbon talent they bring in, or the parents or what have you, and and don't want to give anything away to their opponents. So I guess that's a trend these days.
Some of it's just Harbaugh being Harbaugh. He'll put fake names on there, too, or old players. I mean, some of it's just Harbaugh being himself.
Yep.
Tom, you're a gentleman and a scholar, always, for joining us. Appreciate it, man. Looking forward to catching up with you on Thursday, my man, to get some updates. All right?
Man, that sounds outstanding. See y'all.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
So I wanted to bring up this topic because this was something that was actually asked to me yesterday by a few of you on Twitter about just Arkansas. And we don't want to talk about rivalries. I don't want to get into that aspect of when it comes to college football and this upcoming season and all that, because we're speaking specifically about 2019. But the question was asked that, say, Arkansas for sure is going to go 5-7. Like 100%, that's what's going to happen. Let's just play that assumption game. Right. They go 5-7, which means they would win their four non-conference games.
You'd assume.
And this is for this situation, we're assuming that.
All right.
And then they go 1-7 in conference.
All right.
It's not going to make everybody thrilled or anything, but it is progress, and it is possible. It's a possibility.
It's improvement. And I think that's for a lot of people, and I'm in this category, that's the floor this year. That's 5-7 really needs to be about as bad as it gets this year.
Yes, has to be that case. So knowing that you would go 1-7 in SEC play, and knowing what the schedule looks like this year, that one SEC victory, who would you want it to be against?
Auburn. And here's why I say Auburn or Mississippi State would be my 1-2.
Okay.
It needs to be a home win. The fans deserve a home win. This state needs some energy from a home win. And it's as good as it might set up if you beat Ole Miss and ran out to 4-0, how discouraging would it be to be 1-0 in the league, which Arkansas has not been 1-0 in a long time in SEC play? Would you say 7 years, I think, since they won their last opener in SEC play?
Since 2010.
So 20, okay, so it's been
longer.
8 years. As exciting as that would be, and really the month, it'd be a real bummer or letdown to then lose seven straight. But you also brought up and went through the history of how long it's been, 2016, since Arkansas won an SEC game in Fayetteville?
Against Florida.
You're trying to sell tickets. You're trying to re-energize this program. For me, there's a lot of reasons. Not that I want to beat Auburn the most. I'd rather beat A&M the most, honestly. And let's just leave Alabama out of the conversation. I think it would do more for this program to get a home SEC win. So, and Auburn's the better of the two. That's my reasoning on that.
And that's fair, because the one that first popped into my mind was Texas A&M. And my reasoning behind it is because you haven't beaten them since 2011. And you've been close every single time.
Mm-hmm.
You could even make the argument that you should have won at least half of those games that you've lost over the past few years.
And if you want to make that series a rivalry, like you do, like I do, like Clay does, that becomes the marquee SEC game of the year, you better start competing a little more in this thing.
Yes. Start winning some and losing some instead of just losing some.
A lot more back and forth.
Yeah, because that's what's going to make it great, and that's what's going to add some of the fuel to the fire. And I say it that way because, first off, of course, you end that losing streak you have against them, which is very important. Two, the game is played and against a Texas team and played in the state of Texas.
Right.
Which we know, for Chad Morris's sake and just Arkansas' sake in general, is vital for recruiting. This state is not going to produce enough talent each year. They will have some, but not each year, to be able to field a quality SEC team. It's just the reality.
The state will never produce enough in-state in 1 year that you can only recruit in-state kids.
Correct. So never. You have to go outside the state, and what better place to do it than the state of Texas, which arguably has the most talent of any state in high school football in the nation.
At least within proximity to the University of Arkansas.
Right. So the fact that game, if you won that game, it would be in Jerry World, Dallas Cowboy Stadium, against a Texas A&M team. A Texas A&M team that's poised to be really good this year and looking like they're getting things going, and Jimbo Fisher has a lot of expectations. So it's not like you're just beating a Mississippi school. You're beating a Texas A&M, which is considered to be, and according to the revenue that we talked about earlier, a pretty big-time program as far as everything besides the championships.
And the alma mater of your head coach, too.
Yes,
by the way.
Yes.
And has a near and dear place to a lot of people's hearts that are on that staff right now, whether it's in a recruiting role, coaching role, whatever. There's, you know, you think John Chavis would
oh man
would relish in a victory over A&M?
He would.
It's where he used to work.
Same way.
A&M used to be, obviously, where Chad Morris went to school. His kids went to school there, mm-hmm. or his daughter did. Son's going to come to Arkansas, obviously. There, you know, Jeff Traylor. There's people on staff that College Station A&M means a lot to them. A win over them would mean personally a lot to them.
And not only that, but also add into the situation with Nick Starkel and Rakeem Boyd.
Keep going.
Both played at Texas A&M. And I'm sure it means a lot to them. So add that into the mix as well. I just feel like if you won that game, and again, you're going 5-7, so you're not making a bowl game unless the APR is really good in the grades. Which who cares if you get? Was it going to go 5-8?
So what? Yeah. What do you mean? So you mean we could lose a bowl game and go 5-8?
Yeah, yeah. Everybody looks forward to that. But the point is, though, is that I feel like that Texas A&M game would go further than any other SEC game as far as that goes. Now, but I see your point, though.
Even a home game.
But that's what I was about to say. I see your point about the home game because we threw out the stats. You haven't won a home game in Fayetteville, an SEC Fayetteville game, since 2016. You have not won very many games there at all, period.
There's only two.
Yeah, and there's only two this year.
In Fayetteville.
And, you know, I know you don't have as bad of a losing streak against Auburn that you do against A&M, but you certainly, Gus Malzahn's had your number. Mm-hmm. You've only beat him once, and that was in a quadruple overtime game in Fayetteville.
And let me tell you, beating Gus Malzahn would mean a lot to certain people in this fan base.
Oh, yeah.
Some are big Gus supporters, and, hey, there's a lot of people that root for Gus other than when he's playing for Arkansas. Then there are others around this state that they will root against Gus Malzahn every week.
Mm-hmm. Very polarizing person in
Correct.
The state. So I get all that. So if I had to choose between the two home games, I feel like Auburn for sure would be the one that you'd want to go to. But just with those two games, because listen, folks, you're going to take your SEC wins whenever you can get them. You didn't win a single one last year. The year before last, you only won one, and it was against Ole Miss in one of these crazy come-from-behind victories. Like, you will take your SEC victories against whoever and however they come. But it's certainly, I got people tweeting and say, what? Well, how could you not say Alabama? Well, of course, if you were able to beat arguably the number one team in the country, yes, that would be great. And you have a losing streak against them longer than any other team. You haven't beaten them since 2006 when W was in the office. Mm-hmm. It's been that long. I understand that. But I feel like to get to that progression, to continue on the path you're going down, beating Texas A&M with everything involved, and especially how early it is in the season, I guess you would have lost Ole Miss already, but to beat A&M in that and just kind of get that monkey off your back be a huge relief for many people in this fan base.
You know, for your question was you're going to go 1-7. Who would you pick the one winning? Does it seem like reality? I mean, you want to have a realistic conversation here. That you go 1-7. Your one win was against Bama.
No,
that Bama's probably going to lose one game at that point. Their one loss is going to be to a 1-7 Arkansas. Nah,
no.
It's
not realistic.
So that's not realistic. Beating A&M is realistic. That game is 24-17 a year ago. The Auburn game wasn't really that close, although fans left after losing to Colorado State and then playing Auburn the next week. Fans felt a little more optimistic after not getting curb stomped at Auburn.
Yes.
What was it, 31-3,
yeah.
I believe it was?
Ooh.
And people were, well, I feel better because we were expecting 56-3 like the previous year.
That's embarrassing.
You know, previous time together. So, anyway, I just think the fans need to be treated to a victory at home over a quality team this year, and that would do it. I think Auburn's going to be a hard team to beat. I don't think Arkansas will win against Auburn as it stands right now, because I think Auburn is going to be a team that can control some things from the line of scrimmage on the defensive side. But I think a team like Arkansas, whose offensive line is still a huge question mark, is going to have a problem. That's why it would make it a little sweeter to win that game for those reasons for me.
Well, let me ask you this then, because you say Auburn, I say A&M. Which one of those is Arkansas more likely to win between those two opponents? Auburn or A&M?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah. Because I'm kind of struggling trying to figure it out, too.
Yeah.
I personally would lean towards A&M just from matchup sakes. I think that matchup would be more beneficial because instead of going up against the exact same type of style or at least a coach that knows each other very well, maybe an advantage there. But Auburn game being at home.
You talk about a game that has a lot of pressure on it For A&M, you think the Arkansas game? Yeah, I mean, kind of does, because they got Clemson, they got Georgia, they got Bama, they got LSU, they got Auburn on their schedule.
Oh,
can you imagine? I mean, not that they're sitting there wringing their hands over the Arkansas game. I'm not trying to say that. But can you imagine with all of those teams on your schedule and all the teams that still have to be played after Arkansas, if Jimbo's team lost to Arkansas?
They'd probably go 6-6.
Oh. I mean, 8 wins this year for A&M may be an outstanding year considering who they have to play.
And losing
and where
to
they have to play some of these games at.
And losing to Arkansas would not,
I mean, I'm just saying,
not be ideal.
To get to 8 wins, there's probably not a path to 8 wins for A&M without a win over Arkansas. That's the point I'm really trying to drive at here.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree with you, because
so it puts pressure on a game like that. Just like it puts pressure on Arkansas. Sad to say, but truthful statement coming. It puts pressure on Arkansas to beat Portland State, to beat San Jose State, to beat Colorado State, to beat Western Kentucky. To have any chance at bowl eligibility, there's no slip-ups there.
No.
Now, Arkansas is trying to dig out of the ditch. For A&M, it's the same thing. They've got to beat the Ole Misses and the Arkansas on their schedule.
Because they're not going to get another chance.
Because they're exactly, because they're playing the Georgias and the Clemsons and the Alabamas. You know, and Arkansas is playing some of those teams too. But A&M's schedule's brutal this year.
Oh, yeah.
Brutal.
I mean, they play Clemson at Clemson, and they also have their Eastern opponent being
Georgia.
Georgia.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They got Georgia. They got Clemson.
It's a little different from Kentucky and Colorado State.
A&M has Clemson, Georgia, Alabama all on their schedule this year.
Throw in LSU, too.
A&M, no, let's not forget LSU and Auburn. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I equate it to what Arkansas is looking at, like with these 4 non-con games. You got to absolutely win these group of games to have any chance to meet bare minimum expectations.
Yep. That's the reality that they live in.
That's
right
just
now.
The way it is.
Yeah.
So,
and hey,
I say there's pressure on that game. Not that they're, like you said, not that they're nervous about the game. They just know that this is a game you better take care of.
Yeah.
You can't slip up. And this was a team you only beat 24-17 a year ago. So.
Yeah. And you can't have that embarrassment in year two where you're supposed to make those strides to be a better program. You can't be doing that, too. Hey, if Arkansas wins, though, what are the odds that Jerry Jones will let them rush the field down there at Dallas Cowboys Stadium? I don't think that would happen. But it'd still be really funny to see people try.
Well.
It would go a long way, though, if you got a victory against the Aggies. There's no question. It would.
It'd be sweet. That's the team that I hope Arkansas can create a real rivalry series with, much more than Missouri.
Yeah.
But
and then ruining their season, which it would, as we talked about, that would add some fuel to the fire of the possible rivalry.
You lose to Arkansas.
And heads are going to roll. Somebody's getting fired.
You better beat Alabama. You better beat 2 of the 3 between Alabama, Georgia, LSU.
Yeah.
If you're Jimbo, you better win 2 of those 3 to correct for that.
I ain't seen any of those happening.
And you're not going to the college. I mean, let's just be honest. You lose to Arkansas this year, and I'm not being disrespectful to Arkansas. Let's just talk about reality. A team that loses to Arkansas this year is not going to be a candidate for the college football playoff and be one of those final 4 teams.
Yeah.
That's going to be a loss unless you were like 11-1 and won your the SEC. I mean, it'd have to be your only loss, and there'd have to be extenuating circumstances. And just the odds of all of that are almost nothing. Yeah. But just where Arkansas is at right now as a program, it would cause great disrespect for your program. There would have to be extenuating circumstances for you to be considered.
Yeah. No.
Or Arkansas is a hell of a lot better than we think they're going to be.
Yeah, which one's one of those more likely? Yeah. So, I don't know.
That's the kind of loss you are right now.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod at hitthatline.com.